You're listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast.
We're very serious crafters,
and we craft very serious crafts.
Very serious. Hi, and welcome to episode 4 of the Very Serious Crafts podcast. I'm Haley from Red Handled Scissors.
I'm Molly from Wild Olive.
And I'm Heidi from Hands Occupied. Today we'll be talking about inconvenient inspiration, breaking the rules, and the annual handmade glory that is Me Made May. So how's it going today, ladies? We're on episode 3 already. Wait, 4. 4!
4! Come on, Heidi, get it together.
Wait, this is my third episode, so that's where that brain fart came from.
That is true. That is true. It is the 4th episode of the podcast, but only the 3rd with Heidi. All right.
Yeah. So how is it going?
It's good. I just got back from a trip to Michigan. My dad retired from the Michigan State Police, and so we had a big send-off for him, and I thought of you immediately upon entering his you being Heidi, because I'm looking at Heidi. The listeners can't actually see that I'm looking at Heidi. Immediately upon entering the room at my dad's retirement, I thought of Heidi because there was a gigantic, and I mean, we're talking like almost as tall as me, definitely wider than me, latch hook rug that was a Michigan State Police shield.
It's so and awesome.
It used to hang in the crime lab entryway when I was a kid. And so I was really, really excited to see it. And I took some photos to show Heidi because I was pretty sure that if she'd been there, she would have been just as delighted as I was to see it.
I mean, by delighted, if you mean going up and trying to like rub my face in it like a cat, then yes, that is how excited I would have been.
That's pretty much what I meant. Yeah. I touched it. I definitely had a moment of petting it. And the woman who had brought it into the room told me how satisfying it had been to vacuum it in preparation for bringing it in, because it had been in the storage room. And I was just so happy. It is the biggest, cheesiest, most beautiful latch hook. I mean, I guess it's not quite a rug. It is mounted on wood, so it holds its shape. Wow. Like, you can hang that thing on the wall. It's a masterpiece, is what it is.
That is so
cool. I mean,
cool.
I have seen the photos, and they're epic. That thing's got to be acrylic, right?
You know, I was touching it, and I was thinking so, but I don't know.
Interesting.
It might be a blend. It didn't feel like it was entirely wool, but it didn't feel entirely acrylic either. So I don't think that it definitely wasn't just wool, but it might have been a blend, but it was in really excellent shape.
And that means that that storage area at your dad's work did not have moths. Throwback to
Let's not talk
right.
about it. Let's not talk about the moth thing.
I would want to know, like, was it basically in evidence lockup? I mean, is that how
I mean,
well
it was in a crime lab, yeah. So presumably yeah. they keep the moths
they know
not in their storage.
Yeah, they know how to maintain those things safely.
Well, so do I, and yet.
I wasn't
anyway.
Sorry, I wasn't actually trying to like diss you in any way.
Oh no. No, I just the mothing, it still hurts. It hurts so much.
Sorry.
Anyway, now that we've gone down that path.
Yeah. So what have you been up to, Molly?
Oh, well, I was just last night I was meeting with someone and was talking about the podcast, because it's all I can talk about most of the time now, but I was telling her about it and she went, "Oh, well, you know, are they around here, or what, could you invite? I'd love to meet. I was like, no. One of them lives in Chicago, so that's close, but the other's in New York. And she had the most confused look on her face, like, how do you do that? How do you know them? And so I got to go down the explanation of, well, yeah, most of my friends I've never met in real life. Like, this is, you know, this is just normal for me. And people are always very confused by that. And
that's funny and so true.
It's fine with me. I'm, you know, this works really well. I'm so glad that we have this kind of friendship. But not everyone understands, but oh well.
Well, yeah. That makes me think of, you know, the right before we recorded this podcast, we were chit-chatting as like a little warm-up because we all, you know, work alone. I literally work in a basement alone. and I think Haley was like, I mean, we're a bunch of introverts who like are trying to be extroverted while we record this. And I feel like that it kind of part of why I love doing this kind of work freelance full-time from home is that I can have all these friends that are real friends on the internet, but I don't have to interact with people in person all the time.
Exactly.
I agree so much. There are people who are listening to this who are like, I don't understand.
And the rest of them are going, yes, I so understand.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Oh, that's funny.
But it also is just really nice to... I was talking to my husband about this because he had his first day being his own boss, and he does a different kind of creative work than we do, but he pretty immediately decided that he was going to go into a workspace with some other people who do the kind of work that he does, because I think he needs that community and that feedback. And I was talking to him about it yesterday, and like just doing this podcast has brought so much more interaction into my daily life than I've had in years. And I mean, yeah, I talk to people on Twitter and Facebook and whatever every day, but like having colleagues isn't a thing that I've had since I used to work in book publishing. And I haven't had that since I left publishing. And it's really nice.
It is.
I agree. Yeah. Yay, friends.
Yay.
Yay.
How about you, Heidi? What's new?
I mean, I've been doing a lot of gardening because while we record this, it is May 3rd. So I've been doing a lot of gardening because it's been like snowy in Chicago up until the last week, which is super weird for Chicago. I grew up in Fargo, literally like the movie, for those of you who don't know. So I feel like I'm at home, like climate wise right now. but yeah, I've been really busy in the garden. I've been getting ripped, fighting with my topsoil.
Nice.
And then... speaking of freelancing full time, the only problem is that I'm like, oh, I've got to get this garden in before it gets this hot or this rainy or whatever. And it's been like a little bit challenging to keep up with all of my deadlines.
That's so hard.
Yeah.
But I don't regret it. I'm excited because I've been, again, I live and work in a basement full time. So being outdoors and above ground has been an achievement for me personally.
That's nice. And there's something really pleasant. Look, working with soil is similarly meditative to knitting or something like that. And it's a really nice way to let the mind wander in a productive way, I think.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Anyway, that's enough about us, I think.
Yes, well.
Slash a good segue for the first thing you were going to talk about today, Haley, which was antiquing with your dad.
Oh, yes. So I live in New York City and my dad lives in Michigan. And so we don't see each other very often because my dad is not really a city person and I have to jump on a plane to get to Michigan. So it's like we talk a lot and he's discovered FaceTime, so we see each other pretty regularly. But I'm not actually in the same room with him very often. And so whenever I am in Michigan, we have a standing, like, full day date to go to all of our favorite antique malls and like little hole in the wall shops and things like that. And it's a very full day. He comes to get me and we get our morning coffee and then we just start out at our first big mall and continue throughout the day and, you know, stop and grab lunch somewhere local. And it's all very adorable. But also my favorite, it's the thing I look most forward to when I go home. And the thing that is really fun about it is we are both looking for tools. And I'm generally looking for either antique bobbins for bobbin lace, or I collect Singer Featherweight sewing machines. And when I say collect, I don't mean they sit there. I mean I use them. I collect them to be both beautiful and useful. And so I've always got my eye out. I've got a running list of things that I've always got my eye out for. And my dad sort of knows what's on my list. And he, in his retirement plan, is to work in his wood shop. And he's like building a new wood shop and works with hand tools and restores some hand tools. And so he's always got tools on his list that he's looking for. And so my dad and I wander these antique malls and pick up random tools from either of our trades and explain what they do to each other. And it
I
is,
love it.
It's really, really fun. And so I just got back from doing that. And we actually got to do it twice while I was home because we did our full day antiquing and then apparently at the county fairgrounds where I grew up, there in the summer months, the last Sunday of the month, is this huge, huge antique fair on the fairgrounds. And so I got to go to that, and I've never been in town for it before. And so it was awesome. And I found, I've been looking for the, perfect is sort of a relative word, but the perfect for me antique toy sewing machine. This one mostly just to look at, although I will restore the one that I finally did find and make it work. But I finally found one, and it's especially nice because I found it when I was with my dad and when we were geeking out about tools. It was really fun.
I love it.
Now, I really, yeah. really like that.
Yeah, it's like you found one that you really like, and it comes with a good memory. It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And so I can't share any more about that because I haven't had a chance to research it, so I don't actually know. I don't actually know when it's from and everything, but I'm really excited.
Is it a hand crank one, or does it actually? Mm-hmm. Okay, very cool.
It's a German hand crank sewing machine that came with the paper. Like the original instructions.
Oh, cool. Nice.
But it's, and the original box top, it looks kind of Victorian, but I'm not really sure. It could just be the style.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to look into it further, but I'm sure I'll bring it up in a later podcast. But so.
Can't wait
so
to hear more.
So that is antiquing with my dad.
Yeah, that's so really sweet. I've seen a picture of this thing, and I encourage all the listeners to check out the show notes to see this because it's gorgeous too.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I'm so excited. It caught my eye, and I was like, oh, that one. I've been looking for a couple of years, and it's not that they're rare. Like toy sewing machines aren't rare, but I just hadn't found the right one yet, and this one was like, yes, me please. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, all right, fair
nice.
Enough.
Good find.
Yeah, that's very on brand for red-handled scissors, too.
Right. All right. So enough about my antique wanderings. Molly, let's talk about the 100 Days Project.
Yes. So the 100 Days Project, hashtag 100 Days Project, is it's actually, if you aren't familiar with it, the idea is that you are going to do something creative, usually, for 100 days. And I've seen a variety of different things. Sometimes people are making something and it's always the same kind of thing. Sometimes it's just a random thing. Other times I've seen it where it's just, I'm going to take 100 creative photos, or I'm going to arrange colorful objects and take a picture of it for 100 days. And I have just always found this fascinating. I'm not actually doing the 100 days project because it's just a little bit of a commitment that I have not been able to successfully do. I tried one time, at least it was a different kind of 100 day project. And this was all it was required. Make an English paper piecing hexagon a day. That was it. That was the end of it.
Which seems like a thing you could do.
It seemed very attainable. And then you get off a little bit and then you're like, should I catch up and do a couple? And then you get off again. And I think I made like, I don't know, 15 of them or something. And then it just died off. And so that was sort of the end of me going, I guess I can't actually accomplish that. But I've been enjoying this current round of the 100 day project on Instagram, because there's some really, really cool ones that people are making. And the person that I saw originally, I think the person that kind of introduced me to it, her Instagram name is Bargraph. And this time around, she's making 100 pom-poms. But they're really creative pom-poms. She's doing really interesting things with them. Like, she made a pom-pom that looks like a fast food packet of fries, or a squared off dice.
Ooh, French fries.
Yeah. There was one she made.
Sorry.
She made a Totoro, which was adorable. All these different shapes and things, and watching how she does it is really, really impressive. But she's made other creative things as well. But some people are like sharing slowly and taking the pressure off, which is actually really refreshing to see because of my own failed attempt at something like this. But Night Quilter, she is doing, I think she calls
Ooh,
it.
I don't know who that is, but I like it.
Oh, well, I will. We'll make sure that we get you a link to that. And of course, all of these I will put into the show notes so that you can see these fun projects. But she's doing, I think she calls it 100 days of so tiny, or so it's smaller, or something like that. And she's taking quilt blocks and shrinking them down so that you have like 2-inch quilt blocks, but they look cool. Like regular quilt blocks. They're incredible. Yeah. So
that's amazing.
That's awesome. And I definitely need to find both the awesome name and the awesome project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
There's just some really cool things. It's very, even if you aren't participating in it, it's so inspiring to see these things, and you get to watch and wait and go, oh, what's the next one going to be? And I love that part of it. It's good to see. It also, at times, it makes me think, maybe I should have tried this. Maybe I should have done it. But I started a podcast with you guys, so I don't have time for making 100 things. But speaking of like ongoing projects, Heidi, I believe you had some me made May discussion for us.
Yeah.
Easy for me to say.
I feel like we're doing a very good job of being like, now it is your turn to speak. We have such good manners on this podcast.
Well, we are all from the Midwest.
It's true.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Sorry.
But yeah,
never mind, Heidi. We're not going to let you talk. You're out.
No, let's have a fight. We never would. That's the thing.
That's not going to work.
All right. Okay.
Go ahead.
So 100 Days Project actually like legit is a super perfect segue for Me Made May. So Me Made May, I mean, we're recording this in May, as I mentioned earlier. And Me Made May is something that I've always seen a lot of. Coming from the yarn craft end of the spectrum where I come from, I've seen a lot of people who are multiple crafters who do knitting and or crochet, but they also sew a lot of garments. And they are people who are very interested in making most of the clothes they wear, either because A, it's really awesome, or B, it's just something that's really interesting to them. And so for me, I've been trying to get more fit now that I am in my first year of my 30s, and I've been trying to like be aware of being healthier and more fit. And as a like super fun byproduct, I've lost a little weight, which means I can revisit everything in my closet, most of which is a little bit too big at the moment. And so now that it's Me Made May and the knit and crochet like busy season is winding down a little, I keep looking with just like drool running down my face at some of these things that the people participating in Me Made May are doing. And I guess I should probably rewind just a scotch and just say that for those of you who don't know what Me Made May is, I can't believe I haven't stuttered on that. Crossing my fingers that continues. Basically, the challenge is to wear something every day in the month of May that you have made. It started out with just sewing and people who create garments. Forgive me if I am miscrediting this, but when I did some research, it looked like Zoe Sews, the blog Zoe Sews, Z-O space S-O, started Me Made May. And it was a way to challenge people who sewed clothes, garments. And now it's spread to other areas of the craft world, and especially in the knit and crochet world, I've seen it really take off, which is how it got on my radar. Mm-hmm. But I could continue rambling for about 1,000 years on crafts, so I will not. Anyway, all this is to say that I'm really inspired by Me Made May, and now that my measurements are a little different, I feel like this is like the most ripe opportunity to try to make myself at least challenge myself to create a few things and get better at sewing than I have been. And I thought this would be a fun topic to kind of talk among all three of us about, because you two are both much more accomplished sewists than myself. So what are your thoughts on Me Made May?
Well, I would say Haley is more so than I am. I sew more for crafts and small projects. Mm-hmm. I have made two grain line woven tees. Mm-hmm. They're okay. The fit is a little bit, it's not ideal. But Haley, I know you've sewn much more extensively than I have.
Yeah. It's funny. Me Made May always makes me feel incredibly guilty, because May, at least for the last couple of years, I have had a book going during Me Made May. And so it's basically me watching the rest of the internet hit their sewing goals and me feeling really guilty about the things I haven't made.
Yeah.
Because, and I mean, in a good way, I'm super inspired by just looking at everything that my sewing friends are making and having like deep fabric envy. It's a beautiful thing and also a terrifying thing. The point is, as I've mentioned before, I'm quite petite, mm-hmm. and but also quite curvy. And so basically any store-bought clothes aren't going to fit me correctly. And so I love the idea of Me Made May as a way to show off, like, practicing fitting and like getting better at skills like shoulder seam placement and things like that. Like, those are the things that I really get excited and geeked out about for Me Made May. Cause like, man, that waistline hits you perfectly, or right. Those shoulder seams. Yes. Like, well, that makes me so happy.
And I feel like that's why Me Made May is something, every time I see it, I'm like, ooh, what's that? Like, mm-hmm. And I always get excited about it, but I've been really intimidated as someone who's more of a knitter crocheter. And like, I can functionally sew garments. Like, I can install mm-hmm. a zipper and other hardware in clothes, but I'm so intimidated by actually doing it. But now that I'm like, you know what? I'm a grown woman. I'm a professional crafter. Like, I should be able to do this. And much like Haley, like, I have a pretty petite, like, frame. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is my measurements, if we're rounding, are 40, 30, 40. And you know what? It's not, like, 1950, 1960. So the average off-the-shelf small, medium, large, of which I have to get a large because of my bust measurement, It never fits me. Everything's too big, especially in the back and the waist. Or it's like it hits me at like my bust line and my hip line, and I look like I'm swimming in it, and I look way bigger than I am.
Yeah.
And I think that's why things like Me Made May, even though I'm not going to obviously make something every day in May because I've got my own work deadlines. It's just, I think that and the 100 Days projects are two really good examples of ways to like plug into a community and use that and the discussions people are having in those spaces as a good motivator in a really positive way.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, I know you say that you're intimidated by the process of like sewing garments, but as someone who can design knitwear and like you're aware of your measurements and the composition of your body and you can knit things that fit, it is so much more forgiving to make clothes or to sew clothing than it is to knit something and have it hit everywhere properly. And so I think you can transfer those measurements onto a pattern and any, or onto a paper pattern, and any adjustments that you usually make for knitted garments, you absolutely can make the same ones on paper.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll use the podcast as a way to like challenge myself right now / be inspired by Me Made May, because my husband's going out of town this weekend, so maybe I'll just sit down on Saturday and be like, I'm giving myself this day. And I'm going to make myself like 4 of the exact same pattern of circle skirt that fit my new hashtag new or whatever.
Oh, my God. Wait, can you tell we're in our 30s?
But my new waist measurement, because I feel like if I make the same pattern a bunch of times, A, my skills will get better. And B, like, I think I'll just that is a good, like, basic foundational piece that I could use as a springboard for expanding those skills.
Oh, absolutely. And circle skirts are really forgiving.
Yeah. And then I can, and then my understanding too is they're pretty simple to take in if I lost or gained weight again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. As long as they're, I mean, just at the seam.
Yeah. Very cool. Anyway, thanks for this little like pep talk, everybody. Yay! that's really funny to me.
That's what we're here for, guys.
Yeah.
Crafts and love and pep talks.
So
that's right.
Well, I've been finding inspiration from hashtag Instagram projects. what is...
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, well, I've been finding inspiration from projects on Instagram. There are other ways to find crafting inspiration, right, Haley?
Right, Heidi. Oh my gosh. And deep breath. Okay, so I have this problem, and maybe you guys can relate to it. I am incapable of coming up with new good ideas in a time and a place appropriate for, say, writing them down.
Yeah.
In much the same way as some people wake up in the middle of the night with an idea, I start writing blog posts in the shower, and I stop in the middle of my morning runs. This actually happened when I was writing my cross stitch book, that it's 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm running. I had to stop mid mile and make an entire list of pattern ideas that had just dropped into my head fully formed. It's like, what? Hello, busy. And I mean, this, it happens to me a lot, especially in the shower. I'm thinking about bringing a dry erase marker into the shower.
Ooh,
that's brilliant.
So I can write it on the tile.
Yeah.
Because I guess it happens with such frequency, and I so frequently lose like the fully formed like opening paragraph or something like that that I've written by the time I'm actually out of the shower and can write it down, that I just need Maybe some commiseration. I don't necessarily need solutions, just commiseration.
Well, I'm so glad that you said that because the exact same thing happens to me. And it really, it is typically an opening blog post paragraph. I don't know why that is. Maybe because that's probably the hardest part of a blog post for me to write. I usually save it to the end, but for some reason, a shower will trigger some stream of thought that is going to make
it. And they're good, too. That's the problem.
Yeah, or at least in the shower, it seems like a good idea. I don't know if it transfers out, if I remember it correctly. But yeah, it definitely happens. And that's kind of that, your mind thinking about other things and just kind of chilling out, that good ideas come along. But yeah, all the time.
Yeah,
all the same. Time. Actually, just yesterday, I was trying to run out the door and had an idea for a pattern that I haven't really been thinking about this project for a while, but it came up and I had to like scramble through to find the notebook that had all the rest of the ideas it would go with. And I'm poring through pages trying to find so that I could write down two words, but I knew if I didn't write them down, they would be gone forever.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I end up with sticky notes all over because I'm like very neat straight line rows of sticky notes in random places because I need all that information together. I don't have time to pull out the notebook, but I will remember to put it in and I can just drop it in on sticky notes. And ugh. Mostly I just end up throwing away sticky notes that don't make any sense later.
Yeah, my power move is emailing myself from my phone.
Yes, and then never reading it.
Well, I'll read it, but it's been like half auto-corrected. And if you're, in my case, writing a knitting or crochet pattern with abbreviations on a phone, which I do to myself all the time, and it's so dumb. I'm always like, this definitely was probably supposed to be the word swatch, but it's like search or scratch. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, gosh, what was I thinking about when I was watching that episode of Sherlock and working on this deadline thing? Yeah, the struggle is real in terms of this phenomenon.
I have a list of, like, it stresses me out to enter things into my calendar when I'm standing, like, in front of, like, my chiropractor's appointment-making person. And so I have a notes that is specifically for that. And so it will say, like, chiropractor, May 7th at 2:30. Dentist, May 2nd at 4. And then, like, copper tubing. I would be like, oh, yeah?
And then,
no context.
And then you sit there having a conversation with yourself, being like, what are we talking about there, buddy? What's up, it's Heidi? Like, what are you thinking? Where are you at mentally today?
Yeah. Copper tubing was actually a thing that ended up on that list. And I think that it was for a project that I have failed to make for, like, the past couple of weeks, I think. But no. Be more specific, in a hurry, Haley.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's all I have to say about that particular thing, I believe.
Well, then I'm going to jump in here and...
Oh, sorry. I forgot to throw it to you.
You don't... See, we just had a discussion. We don't have to be all polite and take it... So I was just going to charge ahead and snatch
it. Yes, charge. Go.
I'm snatching.
Good.
Instead of swatching?
Yes. My microphone is auto-correcting. That's so weird.
That would be terrifying.
Yes, it would.
Oh my gosh, it would. Yeah.
It would be like Siri in the middle of a sentence, like,
oh, shh. She'll hear you.
That's right.
All of my devices go off randomly, and they'll be like, I don't know what this bug is purple means. I don't know, Siri. I don't know.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy. We're very serious.
Very
serious.
So serious that this is actually a a problem that I've been worried about, because someone just recently told me that I am a rule follower, which I
was it of, one of us?
Was it you? No, you didn't say this. Somebody else told me this. And I thought, oh, you don't know me all that well. But I have some areas in my life where I like things to be, like I want to do the right thing and I follow the rules. But most of the rest of it is kind of, yeah, don't tell me what to do. So, and crafting is often one of those areas where, you know, Amy Carroll wrote a couple books years ago called like Bend the Rules Sewing. And I think it's Bend the Rules Fabric. And I looked through those. I was like, this still seems like you're following the rules. Let's try it Molly's way, which is probably why I had that interfacing incident a while back. But anyway, but so there's just been some things lately where this has come up. Heidi and I, she was helping me with a project I was working on where I had to start out by saying, yeah, so let me begin by saying I didn't knit a swatch and just don't judge me. Which I'm worried actually may have prompted her Instagram post that I saw that said, are you a well-behaved knitter? Do you always do a swatch? And I was like, I see what she's doing there.
You were subtweeted.
Exactly. It was also right around the same time where I was making a pair of felted slippers and I was telling my friend, yeah, so the first one is in the washing machine right now. And she was like, the first one? I was like, yeah, I'm not felting them both at the same time. And she goes, that's a little controversial. Very sweetly saying, what in the world are you doing, Molly? You are not following the knitting and felting rules. Get it together. But she's polite and British, so she wouldn't say that. But all of this made me question if I am willing to break these rules. And it's not, those were just knitting examples because they've been the most recent ones. But I do this all the time with sewing or other crafting things. I just kind of wing it. And a lot of the time it works out. Not always, but a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But it makes me worry that I might lose my status as a very serious crafter. Like, do you have to follow the rules to be a very serious crafter?
I don't think so. I'll say no. That.
Okay.
Like, I think that for me, I've become a better crafter when I've decided to not follow the rules and I've screwed something up. I feel like you learn more lessons by not swatching and then being like, oh man, this hat goes from the crown of my head to my shoulders and that has nothing to do with my tiny rib cage.
I'm trying to picture that hat right now.
I mean, I was
also where your rib cage is.
But yeah, that's how I mean, as someone who is like as a knit and crochet designer, I feel like I end up with some screamers who are really angry that their like project didn't turn out and then they didn't do a gauge swatch, and I'm like, well, you learned a lesson. Been there, done that myself, but it's also not my problem to fix. That was your choice, right, bud.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I have a bit, as a high anxiety human, I have a slightly different approach to breaking the rules, but I definitely still break them. Like, whenever I learn how to do something new, I generally start by learning what the rules are and like how to use them. And then once I know what the rules are and how to follow them, then I break them at will. So I can choose, like I can sit back and be like, hey, that rule obviously doesn't have a real impact. It's just how people have been doing this thing or how they were taught. Versus, oh, that rule is for this reason, because this happens if you don't follow it. Mm-hmm. So once I've learned the rules, I gleefully break them. But I do it in specific ways.
Well, that's because you're very sensible like that. I clearly have the reckless version.
I mean, sensible anxiety, you know. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
But it's also because even as a kid, because I grew up an only child, and so, like, books were my, like, it sounds kind of sad to say that books were my friends, but they felt like it. Mm-hmm. Like, I would get excited and learn things and meet people and go on adventures in books because I didn't have siblings. And so the first thing I always do whenever I learn something new is get about 10 books on the subject. And so that's just sort of my default immersion into a new thing. And so I think that just lends itself to then learning the rules, because I want to completely sink myself into this new world of making a thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's less, I mean, yeah, I am anxious, but I think it's less that and more, I'm just so excited to learn about the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's how that comes out. And I think for a lot of people, just diving into the thing is how that comes out.
Yeah.
And I think both are exactly right.
Okay. So basically, though, you will let me stay in this group after the question. Okay.
I mean, right, we should probably take a vote. All in favor of Molly staying in very serious crafter status?
Aye.
Yeah, that's us.
All right. Okay, seconded.
Unanimous. Okay.
Good. Motion carried.
Yep. Okay.
There we go. That was the gavel, just in case anyone was wondering, because I have the rules of order on my bookshelf.
Of course,
you do.
Of course. Oh my. Well, we probably should start wrapping up, but before we do that, I'm going to officially ask you, Heidi, to wrap us up with some very important notes.
Yeah. So we are calling this portion of the show The Train of Shame.
Yeah.
So we all have our own cars on the Train of Shame.
Okay. Yes. We're all riding the Train of Shame.
Yep. We are riding that train. Choo-choo.
All right. All aboard.
Okay. I'll stop for real.
All right.
So I guess I should probably go first after subjecting everyone to that ramble that I just went on. So the thing that I keep bringing up in this podcast since I've been on it is this Entrelac baby blanket. I was psyched because if you remember back from episode 2, it was something that I mentioned being in my work in progress stash for a chunk of time. And then now I have this niece who's on the way. So I decided, all right, it's time to resurrect the Entrelac baby blanket, work in progress. And I finished it pretty quick because it was like 80% done. Couple things happened, though, that have earned me my place on the Train of Shame. First of all, I had done that 80% of this blanket left-handed. So everything was backwards. And this was Entrelac, which is short rows. So I had to sit down and reconcile working left-handed versus right-handed. What I figured out was a 4-year gap since the last time since I cast it on was 4 years ago. So your tension changes a lot in 4 years, and it changes when you're working left-handed or right-handed.
No.
So I'm a professional knit and crochet designer, so I like figured it out. It was a thing, but I figured it out, got it done, and I was like, dope. I finished this blanket. My niece is gonna get this at the shower, even though she's not born till July and doesn't care. finished it, and I put it into block, and it was some sugar and cream, which has a little bit of a tendency to be overdyed, so the dye water turned blue, but I was braced for that. And the white sections of the blanket, because it's blue and green and white, did not all turn blue. So that worked. And I was like, all right, gonna get this done. Awesome. Awesome. I'm so great.
And
I'm procrastinating, admitting my failure here. Uh-huh. So I think that vinegar must rust metal.
Mm-hmm. It's an acid.
Because I put some vinegar into my dye bath to, like, help with the color fasting on the project.
Yeah.
And I rinsed it, but I didn't want to rinse it like crazy because I still wanted those colors. And it's a baby blanket. It's sugar and cream. It will get washed. It will fade. So I wanted to give it a chance for at least a little while. Well, I didn't rinse it good enough, and all my blocking pins all over that whole thing, which there were a lot because I was compensating for that gauge, they rusted, and now there's brown poopy dots all around this baby blanket all over the place.
Oh, no.
So.
Oh
my gosh.
I'm sorry.
Yep. That's me. That's what I did.
I mean, probably much of that will wash out.
And honestly, though, the other thing I'm thinking of is just buying some white cotton yarn and picking up stitches all the way around the edge where all those dots are from the pins, giving it some kind of edging, even if it's just some garter stitch, reblocking it, and just hiding the rust dots in the selvage where I pick up the stitches.
I think that's totally reasonable. That's what I'd do. Yeah. Besides, the edging on blankets, especially baby blankets, tends to pull out of shape anyway. Giving it a little extra heft is a good idea.
Yeah, so that's me plugging along on the shame train.
All right. Well, I believe this next stop is where I get on. So you know that 3-year sweater I've been talking about?
I remember it vaguely.
The one that's come up in literally every episode thus far. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to keep going with that.
Choo-choo.
Because... right? Because it was not a 3-year sweater. No, no. It was, in fact, a 4-year sweater. The cast on was October of 2012. And Instagram tells me that the blocking happened in October of 2016. So.
That's 4 years.
Yeah. So that is our first official errata. I made a mistake. It's not the 3-year sweater. It's the 4-year sweater. But, I mean, and as I was telling these guys, the sweater doesn't fit me. And it's because, as we've said, I'm a petite lady. There's too much ease. And the ease makes it, like, my measurements are perfectly fine for it, but not perfectly fine for the ease. And, alas, I'm going to have to shrink it. And I'm really afraid to do that, so at some point we may have an entirely different tangent on how I killed the sweater.
Oh, well, something for a future Train of Shame segment, I would assume.
Or like the Train of Victory.
Ooh, it might be a triumph. You guys, you have so little faith in my ability to shrink this sweater.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm going to ruin it, but just in case I don't.
my Train of Shame car, which could be the caboose at this point, I don't know, is basically that I kind of went into this podcast with some conversations we had feeling that I was going to be inspired to get some things done, things that we talked about going back to episode 1. Having these regular conversations and sharing them with anyone who wants to listen, that would kind of hold me accountable. And in fact, since we started recording this, I have not touched a single thing. I have not started tidying up my craft space. I have not blocked the scarf, and it's now 80 degrees here. I have not checked for any moth signs anywhere, which I was so sure I would do after that conversation. It's all just still sitting there, which is a problem.
If it makes you feel any better, I haven't finished my spring cleaning either.
All right, I do actually feel better about that.
Yeah, I haven't started.
It's in exactly the same place as it was when I had started doing it. Okay. So.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, there's always next time.
Yeah. Always next spring.
Well, I was thinking like the next time we record a podcast, but you know, whatever. Let's give us some space on that.
Yeah. There's always room on the Train of Shame.
Exactly.
Or the Train of Triumph.
That's one. What about the hot air balloon of triumph? The dirigible of triumph. The Zeppelin of triumph.
The Hindenburg of triumph.
Oh, never mind.
Nope.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right.
That didn't work.
Stop. I apologize.
Yeah, I think it's time that we pull into the station, you guys.
All right. I guess this is our stop.
Yeah. So I think that we will wrap this up.
Well, one thing I've forgotten to do the whole episode is say happy birthday to my husband, whose birthday it will be the day this episode comes out. So happy birthday, Ed.
Happy birthday.
Aw. Mm. Happy birthday.
I didn't make you anything.
And on that, friends, see you next time.
That's right. Thanks Bye. So much for listening.
You've been listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast. If you loved this episode, please share it with a friend who's as serious about crafts as we are. Thanks!